pro-choice liberal feminazi slut Rush Limbaugh warned you about. It's Start Me Up.
Start Me Up.
With Kimberly A. Johnson.
Welcome to my very first podcast. I'm your show host, Kimberly Johnson, and this is Start Me Up. So I've been playing around with the idea of a podcast for some time now, and this past July, I was inspired after listening to Mark Maron's podcast, WTF, when he interviewed Jeff Goldblum. And I thought, you know, I can do that. So here I am. My goal is simple. I just want to have a show that's casual and easygoing and fun. Sometimes I'm going to have a guest. Sometimes I'm just going to be on my own talking and ranting and, pursuing the agenda of manicide. And you can support the show by becoming a monthly subscriber at patreon.com/startmeup. If you pledge $1 a month, you'll get my undying gratitude always and forever. And if you pledge $5 a month, you'll get access to the bonus show and another thing where my guest and I will continue our conversation and take questions from Facebook followers. And if you pledge $10 a month, you'll get access to a free bonus third show with a very special guest. Those topics will be highly inappropriate, politically incorrect, and I'll most likely offend a few people. That's worth $10 a month, isn't it? Anyway, so the format of my show may change. I'm not exactly sure how I'm going to go about doing this. It's just going to evolve over time, and I'm going to allow audience members or listeners to tell me what they like, what they don't like. I may change things here and there, but overall, I'm just going to go with the flow, and it's going to be an organic thing. So for now, I'm just going to dive in. Okay, so today is September 29th, 2016, and I'm really looking forward to my very first guest, teen activist sensation Madison Kimry. I became aware of Madison in 2013. She was only 12 at the time, and the reason I found her is I was scrolling through Facebook one night, and I happened upon this petition on moveon.org. And it was written by Madison, who wanted to have a sit-down with her governor, which is North Carolina's Pat McCrory, about his sweeping anti-voter bill. She was especially concerned that the bill no longer allowed 16- and 17-year-olds the option to pre-register to vote. So she created a move-on petition, which received over 13,000 signatures. And here's a clip of her from 2014 at the We Are Women rally, and just listen to what she had to say.
When I stood up against the elimination of the pre-registration program in my state that got over 160,000 teenagers prepared to vote when they turned 18, my governor called me a prop. It was at Moral Monday in my own hometown that I told him and my fellow citizens that I am not a prop, but part of a new generation of suffragists. Well, my vagina is not a prop either. I refuse to allow my lady parts to be used as an excuse to sell the fear and ignorance that leads to discrimination and policies that are intended to undo the progress made by the women who came before me.
Wow. Don't even think about messing with Madison. And so anyway, in her petition, this is how she ended her petition. This meeting can take place at any time convenient for you. I'd like an impartial local journalist to be present so that neither of us are in danger of the other twisting anything that was said. I want this to be a friendly conversation, citizen to governor. I can't vote, and I don't have $1 million. I'm not a well-funded group. I'm just a kid who was born and lives in your state. However, I do have a voice, and I hope you will take the time to meet with me. Well, McCrory never did take the time to meet with her. He avoided her, and he obviously called her a prop for liberal groups on the radio, which actually allowed Madison to control the narrative. I thought it was fascinating. He was afraid to talk to her because I think he knew he would look like a jerk. But beyond that, Madison took the opportunity to parlay that experience and that that petition, all the attention she got, into full-blown activism. And we became friends after she created this petition. I did a few articles about her. We had some talks on Twitter, and it led to her eventually writing for the blog that I write for, Liberals Unite. And in 2014, I invited her to speak at the rally that you just heard. So we've been friends for a while, and you know, every once in a while we send each other Facebook messages complaining about, you know, activism or whatever it is that's on our minds. Sometimes she tells me about boys or I tell her about boys. We talk about the Equal Rights Amendment. And I'm really excited to have her on my show. So without any further ado, please welcome my very first guest, Madison Kimry.
This is Start Me Up with Kimberly A. Johnson.
Okay, so hello, Madison.
Hello.
It's so nice to have you here. Thank you for being my very, very first guest.
Absolutely. I'm so excited. Podcast. Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited. I don't even know where to begin. Okay, except that I have a few I have a few questions. But wait, before we even go, you're in Florida now?
I am in Florida right now. Yeah.
What are you doing?
Actually, I'm here for, there's a Prophets of Rage concert on Friday, which is like the, like a big super group made by a bunch of bands I like for, and they're only like existing for the election year. So, the closest show was in Jacksonville and we have friends here. So we're here hanging out for the weekend.
Awesome. That sounds fun.
Yeah. I'm super excited.
Wow. And so now let's just clarify, you are 15, correct?
I am 15, yes.
And I just got finished explaining that I met you when you were 12.
Yeah.
I can't even believe it. And you're just...
I can't either.
No, you're so old.
It's weird because like some days it feels like I was 12 like yesterday and some days it feels like it was like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And like, yeah.
Wow. Well, I mean, so much has happened in the time I've known you. And one of the things that blew my mind, and I'm sure it blew your mind, was getting to go to the White House and meet President Obama. So tell me a little bit about that. Like what happened? How did that happen? And what was it like?
Yeah. So honestly, I still don't entirely know exactly how it happened. But it was the 50th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act, and there was going to be a teleconference at the White House. And I got a call like 2 days before this event was supposed to happen. And it was, I don't remember her name, but she was, you know, she worked at the White House and stuff. And she was like, well, we have this event and we know that like, you're really into voting rights and you've done a lot. So like, would you like to attend this event? And you would get to sit in, while, the teleconference was going on in the Roosevelt Room. And I'm like, well, yeah. And so I told my mom, it was like 2 days before. So we had like a day to get ready to go and then drive up to DC. We literally left the next morning and drove up to DC. And they brought me in through the security and everything and into the West Wing of the White House, which I realized the last time I was in DC, which was like a couple weeks ago, for a conference. I haven't been through like the visitors like part of the White House, you know, that all the tourists go through, but I've been through like the West Wing and stuff, which is like kind of insane.
So they
brought me in the Roosevelt Room and stuff and sat me down, and I was in there with all of these, you know, like senators and important people, far more important than I think I was 13 then, I think, or maybe I was 14. I don't know. But then the senior advisor came in and she was like, well, change of plans. The president wants to meet you all in the Oval Office first for pictures. So here I am like freaking out. Everybody else around me was just like, oh, wow, that's cool, you know, and I'm like dying inside. And so she's like, oh, well, Madison, you're going to go in first. And I was like, joy. So we're standing there for a minute and stuff. And then the president opens the door to the Oval Office and he goes, oh, my gosh, Madison. And like, what?
Wow.
Like I was just like, like I have the picture that I have of like shaking his hand and stuff. Like I'm like almost in tears. Like you can see it.
Yeah.
And so just like the awestruck that it was me at the time. And so, yeah, that was really cool. And then he talked to all of us and took pictures and stuff. And the teleconference was supposed to happen in the Roosevelt Room, but all of the press was like across the street in the next building.
Interesting.
So, yeah. So he was like, okay, are we ready for the teleconference? And she was like, oh, well, yeah. And he was like, wait, all these people are across the street, right? And she was like, well, yeah, they're waiting for the teleconference to start. And he's like, nah, I'm just going to go across the street and actually talk to them. So here he goes, like, making his way, and we're all following. We're like little ducks following President Obama across the street. And like, all the Secret Service, like, it was entirely unplanned. And so they were all, like, frantically, like, running around to make sure it was secure and stuff. And we're just strolling across the street with the President of the United States, you know?
Wow. That's just amazing.
And I got to, like, sit in the front and watch him speak and stuff. It was crazy. It was a crazy time.
Did he show you his birth certificate?
Oh my god. he gave me chocolate. That really? Was the coolest thing. I think that was the coolest part. He gave me a little bag with like really swanky chocolate and stuff, and I got a pocket constitution that he signed. Oh, wow. Which I now also have signed by Hillary, which is so cool.
That is so awesome. Was it White House chocolate or was it some other kind of chocolate?
It was White House chocolate.
Wow. Yeah, my dad has, my dad used to work for ABC News and he was a cameraman. So he's got some like White House, he has like a White House cigarette pack. Isn't that weird?
Whoa. I don't think
they would do that anymore, but yeah, he has. Okay. So now I know you worked on the Hillary Clinton campaign. Are you still working on the campaign?
Yes. Well, so we are basically everyone that's like working on the campaign. We're kind of like hired under like as part of Hillary's like field team, mm-hmm. but we all work under like whatever state's coordinated campaign. So like I am a fellow for Hillary Clinton, but I work under the North Carolina Democratic coordinated campaign. It's kind of like a blanket. So we're not just working for Hillary, we're working for Democrats up and down the ticket mm-hmm. in that state. So that like, but yes, I am still working.
How did that come about? Was that something that somebody approached you or did you reach out and try to get this position?
Well, actually it was just, I was volunteering, in my local office during the primary and I was just, you know, I was just like a regular volunteer phone banking and doing stuff like that. And one of the field organizers at the time, he, like, after we won the primary in North Carolina, he was like, you know, you should really think about applying for a summer fellowship. So I was like, oh, okay. So I did, and I got it, and he wanted me working for him. So I actually went over this past summer to Gainesville, Florida for, like, the entirety of the summer to work down there, like as a fellow on the campaign and for the Florida Democratic coordinated campaign. And then I had to obviously go back to North Carolina cause I have like school and teenager things,
yeah.
but so now I'm working, on the North Carolina coordinated campaign, but you know, so I'm basically doing the same thing.
Wow. So are you registering people? Are you going door to door? Is that what you're doing?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, definitely. So basically a lot that we're doing right now, we're getting like really, really close to the voter registration deadline in mm-hmm. North Carolina. So that's kind of scary, but exciting. So we are trying to register as many people as possible. We're phone banking. Someone in our office made like 600 calls or something in one day, and like she just sat like the whole day and made calls, and people brought her food and stuff, and it was like all over social media. It was pretty cool.
Wow.
And we're canvassing, you know, for Hillary specifically. That's starting now actually. So yeah,
well, you know that I was a Bernie supporter during the primary. And,
I do.
And we,
I have forgiven you for that. No, I'm
kidding. And we maintained a friendship and everything. You know, we didn't
know,
get a fight. Can
crazy.
You believe that? And, you know, I want to just kind of give a shout out. I posted about this yesterday. I saw Frontline The Choice 2016, the PBS special, which is on my page. There is, I'm sure you can probably find it on demand, but there's also a YouTube 2-hour presentation, and it's just basically a documentary of both candidates side by side. And yeah. I was already for her. I knew that if Bernie didn't win the primary, that I was going to put my support behind Hillary Clinton. And, you
right.
know, I definitely learned about her a little bit more just watching the Democratic National Convention. I've been, you know, looking, I've been doing my own research, finding out that, you know, she's been, you know, the what she's done for women and children, the fact that she went undercover in Alabama to investigate discrimination and all of this stuff. I mean, I already was aware of Hillary Clinton, and I already knew of a lot of what she had done, but I didn't know everything. So this particular documentary really helped me feel not only like my vote was enthusiastic, but it was such a clear distinction of the two candidates, especially when it came to misogyny. And, you know, I really felt when I was watching this, first of all, I was dreaming about it. The whole night after I watched it, I just kept dreaming all about it, you know, and I was thinking, I want to talk about this and I want people to know about this because I don't know, you know, I want everyone in the country to watch it. But, but it just really struck me that everything that she's doing and all these decisions, you know, I mean, I have issues with some of the choices that she's made, and I would like to see her, you know, either change or add or whatever. And once she, and I'm just going to say this, like I always do, once she becomes president, then that's when we're going to focus on trying to push her in the direction that we want her to go. That's what, you know, you do as a citizen. Because no politician, no president, no candidate is ever perfect. But it really did just give me this feeling of camaraderie of, wow, she is kind of the ultimate, you know, feminist out there who is taking it for all of us. She gets so much crap, including crap from feminists and, you know, people who just want to yell at her, because I think we have so much internalized misogyny that we don't even recognize it. So one of the questions that I had for you is, you know, you get a lot of criticism, maybe not as much anymore, but I remember when you were at least 12 and 13, you were getting criticism from people on the internet saying that your parents were the ones who were instructing you how to behave and how to think, and that, you know, you didn't have a mind of your own. And so I know that your mom was kind of on the fence during the primary, and it was you who convinced her to vote for Hillary Clinton. So what was it that you said to her to make her feel like she was going to put all of her support behind Hillary for the primary?
Yeah. I think it was just kind of, you know, we were sitting like in the living room watching the news and stuff. And she was like, you know, I don't really know who I want to support. And I, like, on the other hand, have been like, I was ready for Hillary before she like officially announced she was running, you know? So for me, I just talked about, what I talk to a lot of people about still is just like the experience that she has and the amount of time that she's been fighting for the things that she believes in, you know, like she is the most qualified candidate we have ever had run for the position of president of the United States. So like just thinking about that and thinking about, you know, she has like these, she has goals, she knows what she wants to do, and she knows what is realistic and what needs to happen to get there. You know, like she knows that not everything is going to just magically appear on a silver platter and we're going to change America in a day. You know, she knows that a lot of work has to be done, and she's been doing that work for her entire life. And she's, you know, and I think that that's what is like, has set her up to be, you know, an amazing president.
Right.
And I think that was just kind of talking about like the experience and her qualifications and stuff, and like how much she truly cares about what she's fighting for, and like the proof that's behind that. I think that's what swayed my mom the most. I think.
Well, you know, now I'm a corporate whore shill, so I'm no longer a Bernie bro. thank you. So the last question about the Clinton campaign, what, or I should say, two questions. What's been the most fulfilling aspect of working for the campaign, and what's been the most frustrating, if anything?
Okay. That's interesting. Fulfilling for me, probably was, or has been so far, this is like the majority of what I was doing, especially when I first started working in Gainesville, was voter registration. You know, we were registering hundreds and hundreds of people every single day. We still are, but, when I first came down to Florida, you know, pre-registration, they have pre-registration for 16 and 17 year olds in Florida, which we didn't have in North Carolina still at the time. And was something that I have been fighting for since I was 12, since you met me. So being able to say, you know, like, Hi, are you registered to vote at your current address? No, I'm not old enough. Are you 16? Yeah, then you can pre-register, you know, right, and being able to pre-register teenagers, even though, like, you know, it's not going to make the biggest difference in this election necessarily, like, just knowing that, like, teenagers have that ability down here and stuff like that and are using it, like, that has probably been the most fulfilling thing. And now that they can pre-register again in North Carolina, that's even more fulfilling to be like, oh my God, this was taken away. This is what kind of got me into politics and into this, you know, and now I'm able to kind of share that with other teenagers. And a lot of teenagers don't even know that they can pre-register at 16 and 17, especially in North Carolina. So that's probably been like the most fulfilling thing. And frustrating. I don't know. Like, it's such a positive experience that I don't think there's like a lot of like frustrating things, I guess. I don't know. I guess also in the same vein of voter registration, the people that like, because a lot of times, you know, when you ask, like, are you registered to vote at your current address? Well, yeah, like, whether it be yes or no, but I'm not voting this year. I don't feel like my voice matters. I, you know, just like kind of the it's just really disheartening to know that, like, there are a lot of people that believe that they really don't have a say in what's happening and stuff. And a lot of times, you know, I usually try to be like, okay, well, I get what you're saying, you know, maybe in like for the presidential election, but local elections are really important too. You know, your governor, your mayor, you know, whatever the case may be, that's really important too. And a lot of times that gets them to think on kind of a closer to home level, but like just kind of the fact that they feel so unenthusiastic about like about even just voting and just like the power that they do have, because they do have it. So yeah, I don't exactly. know. That's been frustrating.
There's been elections that have been decided on, you know, just a handful of votes. So a lot of people don't realize that. And the work that you're doing is so important. And I'm so proud of you.
Aww.
So awesome. Okay. So now we're going to switch gears and we're going to go into a different topic, which is teen sex. And it's something that I've always enjoyed. I know, so scandalous. As you know, my mother and I co-authored a book called The Virgin Diaries, where we interviewed men and women about how they lost their virginity. And the reason I wanted to put out that book was because I knew that when I was a kid, I had questions and I was too embarrassed to ask my mother and I was too embarrassed to talk about it. I mean, I asked my mother some basic questions, but I couldn't, you know, say, well, what does it feel like? And get all that emotional stuff. And, you know, and so of course my friends had certain advice for me that was ridiculous and based on stuff that they'd heard from their friends and so on. So, I think it's always fascinating to talk to young people and hear what they have to say, because, and this is the main reason, because I think a lot of parents out there feel so awkward talking to their teens about sex, and they think that, by not talking about it, that somehow magically their kids won't even have to deal with it. But the truth of the matter is as soon as, you know, the teen leaves the house and goes to school or whatever, it's everywhere.
Exactly.
And so, you know,
you're not helping them avoid it. You're just making it harder for them to understand it.
Exactly. And it creates more questions. It makes it easier for, especially for girls, but I guess for both genders, to feel pressure and to feel as if, you know, for boys too, because boys may feel that they have to do it in order to be considered a man. Girls maybe feel that they have to do it because that means someone loves them.
Right.
So, in a very general, broad way, with your friends. So, and I just want to preface this with, everything that I'm going to ask you is not about you specifically.
Yeah.
It's about your observations. So I don't want you or the listeners to think that you're sharing your personal private life unless you specifically want to. So,
everything said here is consensual.
So with your friends, I mean, what's the climate where sex is concerned? Is it something you guys talk about a lot? Is there pressure? What's the general feeling out there?
So from me and like my friend group, which I'm quite lucky because my friends are all pretty rad. and I know it's like not that way for a lot of people, but we're, I don't know, like we definitely talk about sex and stuff like that. And like, you know, some people in my friend group have had sex, some people haven't, you know, but like, it's not like we don't, none of us are really like pressuring each other. It's not like, it's just kind of like open conversation about like the concept, you know, some people that have had it talking to some people that haven't, you know, stuff like that. But it's really like, it's kind of just a casual thing. Like it's not a huge deal when we talk about it, you know, it's just kind of, it's just casual conversation. And like, we're not like, there's not a lot of pressure of like, oh, you've had sex, like you're such a slut, or you haven't had sex, what? Like you're not a man, or you're not cool, nobody loves you, you know. It's really casual, and like my friend group is pretty accepting, so I'm lucky in that sense. But I know a lot of girls and people aren't that lucky, so that sucks. Yeah. But yeah,
well, I remember, well, when I was a teenager, which was a long, long time ago, I'm 48, so we're talking 30 plus years when I was dealing with all of this. But I remember, you know, things were different, and even though I was a child of the 80s, and it seemed at the time that we were so advanced and had come so far, we really, you know, I mean, we were still naive compared to today's youth, especially with all of the social media and easy access to certain things online. So, which I won't go into, but one of the things that I learned, my sister's 18 years younger than I am, and when she was going through high school, I remember it was kind of popular to hear young women and boys say that oral sex was not considered sex, which I disagree with. I think all sex is considered sex. But is that something that's still floating around out there?
I think it's, I don't know. I think it's just kind of, that's come up in conversation occasionally, like whether like, you know, we, whoever thinks, you know, like is oral sex sex or whatever. And there's like a lot of differing opinions, you know, like, a lot of like the general consensus that I've heard is like it's a type of sex, but like if you have oral sex, like you haven't like lost your virginity or whatever, which, you know, that I get that. I guess like that is definitely still a question, because, you know, it's like a lot of people are like, oh, you know, I gave a guy a blowjob, like, am I still a virgin? Like, was that sex? You know, what did I just do? Like, what have I done? You know? Like, it's, yeah, that's definitely still like a question, I think, amongst a lot of young people. And I don't think that anybody really has like a definite answer.
Well, what I remember is that it was almost as if, oral sex isn't considered sex, so it's okay that I'm doing it.
So it's okay. Yeah. That's definitely still something that's around, like, oh, well, you know, it's not really sex, so like, what's, like, why won't you do it? Yeah. That is definitely still a thing. Again, luckily not amongst like my group of cohorts, I guess, but that is definitely still kind of an issue.
So then, now that brings me to the LGBT community. Back then, back in my day,
get off my lawn.
You know, back then, I remember I had a friend in high school who was obviously gay, although I never really thought of it. I never thought to myself, oh, this person is gay. Looking back, he was extremely gay, and he was one of my closest friends, and I really liked him. He was so sweet, and he was so funny. But I do remember, like, if I would have heard that two girls kissed or two boys kissed or something like that, it would have been such a scandal. And oh my God, I can imagine. I just want to ask you, because I would imagine that your generation is different, that if you were to hear about two girls kissing or two boys kissing, that it wouldn't be a big deal. Am I correct? Is that right?
Yes, that's definitely correct. Like, well, I think it's interesting because, like, if, you know, like if you ask someone my age or, you know, in my generation, like, oh, well, like, what do you think about like gay people? It's like, okay, like what, like, it's not a big deal. And, you know, it's like, that's why I think it's easier for young people now to like come out to their friend, like their family. I can see like, it's definitely still a lot of times a problem, but like amongst friend groups and stuff, people are a lot more accepting, because it's not really like, oh my gosh, you're gay, you're so different. It's just kind of like, it's just kind of something about you, you know, like my favorite color is red.
Right.
It's kind of taken the same way. But like, I actually, my mom asked me, it was a few months ago now, but she was like, would you date someone who's bisexual? And I was like, well, yeah, like, I don't, like, it doesn't, like, if they're attracted to my gender too, like, yeah, why not? You know? So, and she was like, that's interesting. 'Cause like, I don't know if I would do that, you know, like, and it's just kind of like a generational thing. Not that like my mom was like being discriminatory against like bisexual people. It was just kind of like a generational gap, and it was obvious that it was there, and it wasn't necessarily a bad thing or a good thing. It was just interesting to kind of hear.
Yeah, I mean, your mom is younger, a little bit younger than I am, but I can understand where she's coming from. I mean, I would have, you know, I wouldn't really necessarily care about the bisexual part. I think I just would be worried about something I might catch, because if somebody was, you know, I would be worried about that anyway, any sexually transmitted infections. But you know, you open yourself up to even more if you're spreading yourself around to everybody.
not that I'm
shaming, but, which brings me to slut shaming. I know you've written about this, and I know that it's an issue that you have strong opinions about. Is it something that you see? I know not necessarily within your cool group of friends, but just, and I know that correct me if I'm wrong. Are you homeschooled? How do you get your education right now?
Pretty much. I go to an online public school. So like, yes, I'm pretty much homeschooled.
Okay. So, but you know, I know that you have, you are a little different, I think, than a lot of kids for so many reasons, for everything you do. I know you're an actress and I know that you're an activist, but, just being out there, outside of your group, how much do you see slut shaming? Is that happening a lot just in front of you?
So much. And even within my friend group, not necessarily amongst like each other, like, but just like from other, like, you know, someone in my friend group by someone outside of my friend group, you know, was being slut, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yes, that's definitely, it's very prevalent, like, especially where I live, because I live in North Carolina, which is suburban hell. And it's like, it's a lot of, you know, they have kind of like that conservative mindset. So a lot of people, like, even from from adults too, are slut shaming women. And like amongst each other and stuff like that. Yes, slut shaming is like very prevalent, like in my life and around like people in my life and stuff. It sucks.
It really does. And it's something that we need to change. I guess the only way we can do it is just to keep talking about it and elect Hillary Clinton. Because she's going to end slut shaming. Okay.
And that's another reason I love her, is like she addresses that, and she's like, I've seen things that like she said, maybe not like publicly, like in a speech or whatever, but like two people, like I saw something, you know, a young woman asked her, like, I had sex, people found out I'm being slut shamed, but like, what should I do? And I don't remember what she said. I'm not going to try to quote her or something, but she was like, she understood and she talked about that and stuff. And it was just, I love her so much.
Yeah, it's pretty cool to have a hopefully president that will address slut shaming and these kinds of issues. And who better than a woman to do it who's been slut shamed?
Exactly. Yeah, definitely. Because I know a lot of people are like, talk about like Hillary is like trying to connect with millennials and failing and stuff. But like she's addressing the issues that are relevant to us. And like, yes, of course, like we are not the only like generation in the world. And of course, like there are a lot of like issues with, you know, like that elderly people are dealing with that I'm not, you know, things like that. But like she is addressing the issues that are relevant to us and maybe aren't so relevant to previous generations. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah. Me too. Okay, one last question on this sex issue. As far as abortion, I'm getting ready to put out a new book about a teenager who chooses abortion. So I was just wondering, not that you have to be very specific here, but are you aware of people in your age group that you know who have had an abortion? And if you have, do you know her reaction? How did she feel about it? How was she treated?
I know like a couple girls like pretty like decently close to me, you know, that have had abortions pretty recently, you know, in like my general age group, you know, that's something we're facing right now. So it's all kind of happening right now. And I think it was a hard thing coming to terms with, like, oh my God. And actually in both cases, both girls, they had used like multiple forms of birth control and stuff, and were being super careful, but accidents happen.
Yeah.
Happen. like neither one of them, you know, like they're around my age. They were no way prepared to have a child or carry a child for 9 months or anything like that.
Right.
So they decided to have an abortion, and you know, it was a hard kind of position to be in, but like the decision I know for them wasn't that difficult. Cause like, you know, that was the best decision for them. It was the best decision for any, you know, possible child that they might've had or whatever. So like, I know, like it was a hard place to be in, but their decision wasn't that difficult.
I'm really glad now, that you like, put it that way. The hard place to be in, but it was an easy decision.
Yeah. So like, I know that they're like, obviously it's something that, you know, that's happened to them and they've dealt with, but like they're fine now. Like they're not dealing with any like emotional baggage from it, which I know a lot of like women and girls do, and that's fine. You know, it's not fine, but that's
normal.
But they haven't, they haven't had to deal with that really. You know, it's just kind of something that they've been through, but it's not like, hi, my name is blank and I've had an abortion, you know?
Right.
So, they haven't told many people, you know, stuff like that. So they haven't had to deal with a lot of shaming from it or anything, but it's just kind of, something that happened to them and something they dealt with, and now they're dealing with it.
Exactly. And now they're just going to move on and go on with their life.
And exactly. And be teenagers and not have to worry about being pregnant or having a child or giving a child up for adoption or anything like that. That was the best decision for them. And I'm very proud of them.
Yeah. I mean, you hear a lot of critics out there who want to just push the idea of putting a child up for adoption, but nobody nobody thinks about what that actually means. And what that actually means is a teenager is going to have to carry a child to term and face all kinds of scrutiny, face all kinds of judgment from everybody, all the questions.
Exactly.
And, you know, and people who don't know any better are going to say things like, do you have a name picked out? Which means the pregnant person is going to have to explain, oh, well, I'm not keeping it. And that's nobody's business. So this whole idea that, oh, it's just so easy to be able to put it up for adoption. It really isn't. And, you know,
it really isn't. Yeah. And like even though, you know, they've had an abortion because they haven't talked about it much, they haven't had to deal with it a lot, but carrying a child at, you know, 16 or 17 or whatever, that like going to, you know, a public school or wherever they go, that's like, oh, they're the pregnant girl. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That stepped around and like screwed up or whatever when they, again, like they were both so careful, but accidents happen and they got in a bad position and they had to make that decision and deal with it. And they did what was best for both of them. But like, it's a lot harder than it seems.
Yeah.
And both of them, like neither, one of their, like they couldn't tell their parents because that would have been like a dangerous situation for them and stuff. So it just was not an option.
Yeah, exactly. That's another reason that it should be available without parental consent, because, you know, we don't know who the parents are that like are abusers or, you know, whatever it is that the teenager may have to face. I think it's a good thing when you can just, you know, go have an abortion, a safe, affordable abortion,
exactly.
And not have to tell your parents, because it's never easy to do that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's really not. And like, it's just they may have made the best decision for them. Cause like high school is hard enough without having a baby and having to stay home cause you're, you know, 8 months pregnant or whatever, and you're failing English, and then you're not going to get into a good school. You know, your baby that you put up for adoption might, but you know, then you've ruined your future, and you didn't have to, you know.
And let's face it, I mean,
because like there are some girls that get pregnant at 16 and have their babies and graduate from college and have wonderful, happy lives, and
exactly,
that's incredible.
Yeah.
But it is not for everybody, and I think that's what a lot of people need to understand.
And it's also always burdening the female, because it's not the guy who's going to stay home from school or work and take care of the child. It's going to be the female. It's going to be the mother. And she's the one who's going to be missing out on education. And so she's the one who carries the burden. And that's just the way it is. So, all right. Well, this has been a fascinating chat. And I want to thank you for being my first guest. You are such an inspiration to so many. And I hope that you come back for another show. So there you have it. This has been my first podcast, and I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please head on over to patreon.com/startmeup and become a show sponsor. And please stick around if you are one of our subscribers for And Another Thing, where Madison and I will continue our conversation and answer some questions from Facebook followers, which is only available for the subscribers who pledge $5 a month at patreon.com. Alrighty. Thank you.